You'll love it like radiant diamonds.
And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can follow us, of course, on Facebook, Twitter, all the social media platforms. We have them all. So again, we thank you for listening. Last week we had a great show as we talked to Tommy Jones of World Orphans. If you want to hear that one, you can of course go find the podcast on iTunes or on our website there at investinghope.com. And so it's just a last week's conversation, we really focused on the pro-life ethic and what does that mean for Christians within orphan care. How are we going to partner with organizations here in this country and around the globe to help and assist orphans, not just by putting them in institutions, but by helping them in the family structure. And so a great conversation. If you want to listen to that one again, you can on the podcast. Today, what I want to do is talk about a few things. I want to start by the first two segments discussing some news that some different articles that I've read about abortion in the modern era and what that means for us as folks that claim to be pro-life. What does it mean as we watch the abortion, kind of the abortion argument progress to where we knew eventually it would get to? What does that mean for believers? What does that mean for Christians? What does that mean for pro-lifers? And I also want to look at, there's an article also written recently going after the president and talking about the money that the federal government is putting and making available to pregnancy centers. And so we're going to start there. And there's an article recently written at Rewire by Teddy Wilson. And what they're doing is they're discussing funds that are being made available to pregnancy centers around the country. And I just want you to hear the language that they use. And then I want you to tell me who the extreme ones are. Okay, so here's the article here. A review by Rewire found that at least $3.1 million in grants have been awarded to religiously affiliated organizations or crisis pregnancy centers. And then here, listen to this. They say, or crisis pregnancy centers, comma, also known as fake clinics. Now we can stop there. Very few people would call places like Hope Resource Center a fake clinic. The ones that are calling us fake clinics are NARAL and Planned Parenthood and organizations that spend money and spend time promoting abortion. Again, not promoting all the other services that Planned Parenthood provides, but really mainly promoting abortion and access to it. And they're upset that $3.1 million. Now, that's a lot of money to a lot of people, but in the grand scheme of things, in the federal budget, $3.1 million, not a huge amount of money. So they're upset because $3.1 million in grants have been awarded to crisis pregnancy centers. The Trump administration in recent weeks has awarded millions of grants to state governments and organizations to fund abstinence-only sex education. More than $3 million in federal funds has gone to organizations that distribute inaccurate, now this is their wording, inaccurate and misleading information about sexual health. So let's stop there. Now, as you can already tell, I'm going to get a little amped and passionate today in some of the discussion. Forgive me or not, you know, it's just the way it is going to be today. So we can just stop there. And look at, they're upset that $3.1 million has been made available to states around the country for sex education, for abstinence education, abstinence-only education in some cases. And then they say that they have gone to organizations that distribute inaccurate and misleading information about sexual health. So here's the thing. Abstinence is the only. Now hear me when I say this. Abstinence is the only 100% foolproof method to prevent pregnancy, to prevent STDs. So abstinence, you can agree that with it or not, but one thing we all have to agree with is if you do not have sex, your chances of getting pregnant and getting an STD decrease in a major, major way. Okay, so they're upset. And here's typically, here's how it's laid out for us, is we're told, well, well, the kids are going to have sex anyway. If you're talking about abstinence, then you're not providing them with protection. You're not providing them with condoms. You're not providing them with birth control. So why would you teach abstinence only when you're not, you know, they're going to go out and have sex. So why not teach them other things? But here's the thing. And I could easily be convinced that sex education needs to be very broad. That's not the concern here. The concern here is they don't want to teach abstinence at all. They would rather go in the classroom with your student and teach them ways to have sex, more exciting ways, more interesting ways. Ways that even a married couple may go, well, I don't know if that's the proper way. I don't know if that's the way the Creator designed it. You see, the model that we want to put in place is abstinence, but what it's doing is it's telling folks that sex was created by a Creator and was a gift for marriages and was designed that way. Are there going to be kids that go out and have sex? Absolutely. There's no arguing that. But that doesn't mean that I won't teach my son and my daughters that abstinence is the best way. It doesn't mean that I won't teach them, hey, the best thing to do is save yourself for your spouse. So that's the issue here in the Rewire article. And then they say the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services awarded $8.9 million in grants to 21 organizations and agencies through the Competitive Abstinence Education Program. HHS has awarded an additional $2.1 million in grants and subgrants to 34 organizations and agencies through the Abstinence Education Program created by who? The Affordable Care Act. So here's the thing. The folks that they would line up with politically created the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act then created grants to fund abstinence education. And they're still upset. So the grants for abstinence-only education programs come in the wake of, they're saying, the Trump administration's decision to eliminate $213 million in grants for teen pregnancy prevention programs and research. See, here's the issue. When we talk about federal funding, here's where the problems come into place. And not to get deep into the weeds here, but the reason that and we haven't even got into real numbers. I mean, these numbers are 30 million and 3.1 million, 8 million. Again, in the grand scheme, not a huge amount, but okay, let's say that that's a lot of money. Planned Parenthood, one abortion clinic that has a bunch of affiliates across the country, receives every single year $500 million from the federal government. Now I know that the argument that's going to come with that is, well, they get that through insurances, they get that through state insurance and federal insurance, and so it's reimbursement, and I get that, okay. But here's the thing. Those reimbursements from the state and federal government allows a place like Planned Parenthood to provide hundreds of thousands of abortions every single year. Now I also understand that some that disagree with me are going to say, well, there's a law that says no federal money can be used for abortion. Okay. But again, that money, we know how money operates. We know how budgets operate. So if I'm creating a budget and I'm the largest abortion clinic in the country and I'm creating my budget, I can guarantee myself we're going to have $500 million allocated to us every single year through these reimbursement programs. What does that tell me as the person that oversees that budget? What that tells me is, okay, I already have $500 million taken care of. So if we need to focus more marketing to abortion, if we need to focus more of our funds to providing abortions and getting out there and getting the word out and building centers in low-income areas and focusing all of our efforts on low-income areas, which is what they do, and focusing our efforts to shift some money that we might have been using had we not been getting the reimbursements and the allocations from the federal government, if we could just shift some of that money to put into our PAC where we can give thousands and thousands of dollars to political candidates. And then what we can do is we can make sure that we're on all the cable news outlets and we're talking about these things. And then what we can do is shift more money to put out billboards and to put out commercials targeting specifically young people who we know are being are having sex and who may need an abortion. Do you see how that works? So if your spouse came in today and said, "Hey, I found out that over the next year, we're going to get $100,000. Now the only stipulation is this $100,000 cannot be used for X. So if you're running your bank account at your home, what you're going to do is say, "Well, I already had $10,000 set aside this year to pay taxes, and I had maybe $20,000 set aside this year to pay the mortgage. But now what you're telling me is I have $100,000 coming in, so I can use that $100,000 for taxes and mortgage, and then I can shift, because budgets are fungible, I can shift that $100,000, I can shift the dollars that I already allocated toward the mortgage and taxes to do something else." Do you see how that works? So this particular article is upset that pregnancy centers, as they call them, crisis pregnancy centers, religious organizations, also known as fake clinics, which is just, you know, whatever. They're upset because pregnancy centers are receiving these funds. Do you know how many abortions pregnancy centers provided last year? Zero. You know how many deaths happened due to a medical procedure at a pregnancy center last year and this year and the year before last year? Zero. Do you know how many heartbeats were extinguished at abortion clinics last year? 1 million. So folks, we can act as if we're upset about money going here and money going there, but which side of the fence are we going to be on? We should be able to cut through the political fodder and cut through the straw man arguments and just simply look at the numbers and say, okay, crisis pregnancy centers may be receiving some of these funds and they're going out and they're teaching children that, hey, sex is probably not a good thing to do when you're young. And if you don't have sex, you won't get pregnant. And the chances of you getting an STD drop dramatically. So ideally, you would practice abstinence. So they're upset that that's being taught. And they're upset that pregnancy centers are doing that. But when pregnancy centers do that, not one heartbeat is stopped. Think about that. When you hear people say that crisis pregnancy centers, people that are pro-life, are extreme. If that is extreme, that I want to prevent heartbeats from being stopped, then call me extreme yesterday, today, and forever. We'll be back. Be the light in the crack. Be the one that's been there. Camel's back, slow and pain. Today we're talking about a number of issues, a number of articles that I've read recently, and some of you may be wondering, well, where do you get these articles? Because again, they're own some would say left leaning websites, and I bring that up because I think it's important that we read we read as many things as we can. Don't just get it from the side that you agree with. Because what we want to know what other people are thinking about and what other people are saying. So I spent the first segment talking about an article at Rewired talking about funds that are being made available to pregnancy centers and other organizations, religious organizations, that are teaching abstinence education in schools. And not just in schools, but in different areas. And the numbers, you know, 3.1 million here, 8 point something million here. But again, neglecting the fact that abortion clinics are getting $500 million every single year through the federal government. So the next article that I want to focus on is an article that I read talking about telemedicine and abortion in the modern era and how it's utilizing telemedicine. And so I wanted to share a few thoughts with you on that. So Mother Jones, which is another website you can go to read a number of things, recently featured an article discussing abortion in the modern era. You see, we are living in a very progressive time. That's right. Our phones are now supercomputers. Cars are driving themselves. And abortion doctors are seeing patients via teleconferencing. The author of the Mother Jones piece attempts to make the case for remote abortions. She explains how it is difficult for those that make their home in rural areas to find an abortion clinic. These women are forced to drive hours to see a doctor that will prescribe them the proper pills to induce a medical or chemical abortion. And what that simply means is you're taking a pill to induce the abortion. The solution to this tedious drive, in the author's estimation, is telemedicine. Why drive to see a doctor when one can simply turn their computer or smartphone on and receive a consultation? Why spend the money on gas or invest the time in scheduling an in-person meeting when the internet is at our disposal? Now, I believe these are legitimate questions to ask and contemplate as we enter into modern medicine in a time where technology affords us a vast array of opportunities. And I do not dismiss the importance of advancing medicine and seeking out ways to better serve a population in need. I grew up in rural America. I understand the difficulty in finding proper care and services on a number of fronts, and I applaud the technological progress that now allows rural America to have the world at its fingertips via the internet. But I would caution us as we seek to continue our chase for fast and easy access. What harm are we bringing? Is our desire to have every service at our fingertips forcing us to neglect the lives being altered through some of these services? A recent study performed over a 7-year period by the University of California, San Francisco, analyzed over 19,000 abortions provided by Iowa Planned Parenthood clinics. Almost 9,000 of these medical abortions, abortion by pill, were performed via telemedicine. The study found that there were virtually no difference in terms of complications between patients that saw a doctor via telemedicine or in person. The researchers concluded that adverse events are rare with medical abortion, and telemedicine provision is not inferior to in-person provision with regard to clinically significant adverse events. So, case closed, right? Should we now implement telemedicine across the country to make abortion more accessible? Well, of course not. Now, I can hear the arguments now. Abortion is legal. We need easier access. It should also be free. These arguments neglect the lasting damage abortion has done in our country. These arguments neglect that out of the 19,000 abortions studied over that 7-year period in Iowa, all 19,000 heartbeats that were present in the womb before the pills were taken were ceased and silenced after the pills were ingested. That is 19,000 lives lost in Iowa clinics alone. Out of that 19,000, almost 9,000 women were required and expected to go through their abortion alone without seeing a doctor in person as they receive their care, quote unquote, via telemedicine. Is this what progress looks like? Have we entered a time in society where we refuse to see or admit that progress drives us before heartbeats and humanity do? I've loved looking forward and being progressive in our line of work. I pray that everyone working in the pro-life movement would feel that way. But I hope my desire for progress never usurps my desire to love and serve people. There is no doubt that we are in the modern era of medicine. We have access now that past generations wouldn't have even read about in their sci-fi novels. I pray, though, that this access doesn't make us greedy. Pregnant women need to be cared for properly. This proper care should be available for all women, regardless of their choice to parent, adopt, or terminate. They each need our love and care. You see, abortion ends one life while drastically altering the lives of those that make that choice. This should never be taken lightly, regardless of what side of the political fence you may find yourself. Making access easier may make our political heartbeats flutter, but easier access also makes actual heartbeats stop. I anticipate this conversation continuing for years to come, and we will hear from well-meaning people on both sides of the issue debating what progress should look like. I hope to be a part of that conversation, and I pray that our debates would choose to recognize humanity and the people actually affected by the issues we care so deeply about. And shame on us if we ever see young women that are facing unplanned or even unwanted pregnancies as pawns in our game of political chess. You see, because that's what it's become, even for some people on our side, is patients facing unplanned pregnancy. Patients facing difficult circumstances have now become pawns that we can use to win the narrative of the day. And so what I would simply say to us is be careful. Don't let your passion for this issue, your passion for this movement, force you to neglect the actual people involved. You see, that article that I talked about in the first segment, they don't see people within the crisis pregnancy center movement as humans. They see them as the enemy. They see me as the enemy. They see all the nurses on our staff as the enemy, all our administrative folks on staff as the enemy. We're not citizens that have different viewpoints. We are the enemy. Stealing money. Fake clinics. And I know that some of you are listening and you see them as the enemy. I used to see those that worked in abortion clinics as the enemy. They're not the enemy. We are in a time in society where we see those with differing viewpoints as the enemy. And that's why we've seen what we've seen over the last few months with the protests and the violent protests that have occurred. It's because we don't see other people as just others that disagree with us. We see them as others that need to be silenced and at times even attacked because, again, they're the enemy. So I would simply caution you as you walk through that and walk through your stances. It is okay to be passionate. It is okay to call for the defunding of abortion clinics. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's wrong for abortion supporters to call for the defunding of pregnancy centers. They have their right in doing that. What I do have a problem with is when they say things that aren't true. And when they call us fake clinics and when they act as if we're extreme religious zealots. When I would encourage them to come sit down with me, come sit down with the staff at Hope. I would love for them to come and watch a baby shower that we throw for a first-time mom. To come and watch the patients that come for parenting class. To come and watch the atheist that walks in our doors and is loved well. The Muslim, the Buddhist, the Wiccan, the agnostic, the transgender, the homosexual, the straight person, you name it, they are walking in our doors at Hope Resource Center. And everyone is receiving the same level of care. Without hesitation and full of love. Why? Because they're not our enemy. They're an image bearer deserving of our love, value, and respect. And so if we believe that to be true for our patients, then we certainly believe that to be true for those that are working in an abortion clinic. It's okay to disagree, but seeing them as the enemy, well, then that makes us question our own pro-life ethic when we fail to see those that disagree with us as image bearers. So they are image bearers. And so how are we going to handle that? What kind of conversations are we going to have? What kind of intellectual consistency are we going to push forward to move the debate forward? To have real progress, not progress that is damning, not progress that is extinguishing more heartbeats, but progress that is truly taking the consideration of the baby inside the womb and the mom and the dad that is involved in producing that baby. We'll be back in a sec. So today what I wanted to do was cover a number of different topics. And we started the first two segments off looking at just the discussion that's happening, and not even a discussion, but the vitriol that we're seeing as discussions are or at least some people are attempting to have discussions about the issue of abortion and life. And so the first article came at pretty hard at the pro-lifers in the pregnancy center world, like Hope Resource Center, to say that we're fake clinics. And some clinics around the country, some pregnancy centers are getting funding from the government to provide abstinence education, sex education in and out of schools. And so they're upset about that. Now, just to be completely upfront, Hope Resource Center does not receive any federal or state money. We are fully funded through individuals like yourself, businesses, and churches. And we do about $600,000 worth of services every single year that the patient never has to pay for, that the taxpayer never has to pay for, and the government never has to pay for. But that's not saying that one day that won't occur. It's not saying that the pregnancy centers that are taking federal and state money to provide abstinence education, it's not saying that's a bad thing. Hope used to do that. And so those are conversations that need to be had. The problem is no one wants to have a legitimate conversation. When you start calling people names, when you start labeling all pregnancy centers as fake clinics, Well, who's going to sit down with you and go, okay, let's have a legitimate, honest discussion when you just labeled every one of us as fake? And you act as if we don't care deeply about the patients that we're serving. So that's what I want to do right now, is share that story with you. We were able and fortunate enough to, over the last week and then yesterday, provide, I think the total number was 7 baby showers for first-time moms at Hope Resource Center. And so last week, we had an opportunity to we had one patient call us and say, look, I'm supposed to be at the baby shower, but my water just broke, so I can't come to the baby shower. This was going to be the only baby shower that this particular patient was going to receive. And so one of our nurse practitioners drove to the hospital and took the car seat and pack and play and the items that this patient would have received in the baby shower, took them to her at the hospital. Well, come to find out that this particular patient didn't have anyone in the room with her. So our nurse practitioner stayed and was able to be there for delivery. And then our nurse practitioner saw one of the doctors on our executive committee, medical executive committee. And so Hope was very much involved in the delivery of that baby, all the way up, you know, from the first pregnancy test, the ultrasound, to actual delivery. Now that's not as common, but I bring that up to say that all we care about is baby, to say that we don't care deeply about these patients is just it is a flat out lie, and it's not true. And then yesterday we had our last baby shower for this particular class, and if you go to our Instagram page, you can see an Insta story about the story I'm about to tell you. You can also see all the pictures on our Facebook page, Investing Hope. You can find all of those, the pictures of the baby showers, and I would encourage you to do that. But yesterday we had a patient come in, and she, as soon as she walked into the conference room where the gifts were, she started sobbing. Now this particular patient is not a crier, and so that kind of took us back a second. And then she sat down and she slowly opened up every single present that was there. And every time she opened one up, she sobbed. And just kept saying, thank you so much. She didn't have anybody with her. She wanted to save all the ribbons on each package. She wanted to rewrap everything after she opened it. You could tell that the whole time she's there, the sense that I got was, I don't know if she's ever experienced something like this, with gifts wrapped, with an event just for her. This baby shower was for her. And she sobbed. And our staff members cried. As we celebrated with her, as we said, we cannot wait to meet your baby boy. You'll have to bring him by and model all these clothes that you got today. And then we scooted the box that held the car seat over to her, and she opened the car seat. And again, the tears came. And she was so excited because she didn't have a car seat. Then the last package was a pack and play. And again, she opened the package, started weeping and saying, I was just telling somebody that I really needed and wanted a pack and play for my baby. And then our staff was able to get around her and pray for her. And maybe for the first time in her life, I'm not sure, she was told that she had value simply because she was made in the image of God, not because of anything that she could produce, not because of anything that she could provide for us, not because she chose life for that baby. She had value simply because the creator of the universe created her in his image. And then one of our staff members looked at her and said, now we want you to know that Hope is not taking credit for this. Jesus gets the credit for this. We love you because he loves us. And he loves you. And as much as you believe we love you right now, and as amazing as you may think we are right now, that is nothing compared to the love of the Father. So excuse me if I get passionate when someone calls us a faith clinic. Excuse me when I get passionate about someone calling me some kind of religious right-wing nut job, an extremist. You see, because we take it personal. Because what we do at Hope Resource Center on a day-to-day basis has nothing to do with what happens in Washington, D.C. It has nothing to do with what happens in Nashville. It has nothing to do with what policy is being written right now as we speak. What it has to do with is there are image bearers walking right now that need our love, our care, our respect. And so that's why we're going to start parenting classes up again in a few weeks. And then when that's over, we'll throw 10 to 15 more baby showers. And we'll provide 10 to 15 more car seats, 10 to 15 more pack and plays, diaper bags, clothes. Just like we've done for 20 years. And sure, we will call out folks when they label us inappropriately. But it doesn't matter how many articles are written. It doesn't matter how many policies are written. Our mission is clear. We are going to love and serve the image bearer. And we are going to encourage them, without apologizing, to choose life and to celebrate life. And when they do that, they are going to know without a doubt they're not in this alone. They're going to know there's a team of people that love them. Watching yesterday, and please go and look at the pictures on our Facebook page, but watching yesterday as the mentor hugged the mentee. And not to get into great detail, but watching these two cultures, completely different people, completely different walks of life, being brought together over something so beautiful as a pregnancy. That is why we do the work that we do. And so your gifts, your prayers, your time allows us to do the work that we do. And I think at times we say things like, oh, we couldn't do this work without you. And it sounds cliche and it's played out all the time. Well, I'm being completely serious. I just got through telling you, we receive no money from the federal government or the state or the taxpayer. We don't charge the patient a dime. So really, the funds that you provide allow us to do all of that. And you can partner with us now at investinghope.com. So as we look across the landscape and as we see different articles and news, and we may find ourselves going, man, we're still not making any headway in the life movement. I'm just going to let you know that is false. We are making huge strides in the life movement. And a lot of that is thanks to the work of pregnancy centers, as they would call them, fake clinics. So I want you to understand that the work that we're doing is making a huge impact, a lasting impact, eternal impact on the lives of these moms and these babies. And so we don't take that for granted. We don't take you for granted. And we are just thankful that we're able to be a part of that. And as we see more and more moms choose life, as we're able to provide more ultrasounds and pregnancy tests and now doing Well Women Care, as we're able to do all of these things, the goal never changes. We want every patient that walks in, regardless of the decision that they make, to walk out knowing, man, those people at Hope Resource Center really know how to love. And they also love this Jesus guy that I may not know a lot about, but he has transformed them. There's no question about it. And you help us do that. We'll be back in a sec.
There's a fear I hold inside of me. One thing I know.
It's been a good show. Thank you so much for listening. InvestingHope.com. You can hear the podcast. Should be up tomorrow. You can also find it on iTunes. You should subscribe and maybe even rate it and review it. We'd appreciate that as well. So if you want to read our blog I read earlier, you can do that at InvestingHope.com as well. So thanks again for listening. A lot of things going on at Hope. And today, the conversation, I just wanted to point out some of the inconsistencies in debate and conversation that occurs around the life and abortion movement, and kind of steer you to a point of understanding better what is going on at what some folks call fake clinics, but the amazing work that's happening in pregnancy centers. And a couple weeks ago, I was in Washington, D.C. with thousands of people that work at pregnancy centers, and the work that's being done is just remarkable and really needs more credit than they're getting. And so I'm going to do all I can to make sure the credit is given on this show every single week to the work that's being done right there on the front lines in the pregnancy center movement. A couple things I want to point out. Excited this week on Thursday, we are having a pastor's breakfast Thursday morning. It's going to be fun. I'll report back to you on that in the coming weeks. But what we're going to have, we're going to bring close to 30 pastors together and just have a breakfast and talk about the work of Hope Resource Center and the work that the local church is doing for the life movement. And should be a fun morning. And if you're a pastor listening, you're like, well, I didn't sign up, I didn't know anything about it, shoot me an email. I'd love to connect you. Andrew@KnoxvilleHope.com. Would love to see you at the breakfast. Also coming up is our golf tournament. If you are a golfer, or even if you're not a golfer, but you like to drive a golf cart around and you want to go and hang out on September 25th on a really nice golf course and look at some amazing houses that are right there on the golf course at Getty's View, then I would encourage you to go to our website, investinghope.com, click on Get Involved, and then click on Events, and you can sign up for the golf tournament. It's going to be a great time. We have raised, this is our 12th annual Hope Challenge Golf Tournament. During that 12-year period, well, we even haven't had this one yet, but during those 11 years, we have raised over $400,000 to do the work that we do at Hope Resource Center. So help us make this one the best year yet. So I would encourage you, sign up, have a team of four. Would love to see you out there. You can find all the information on our website, investinghope.com. For those of you that are listening and you go to church out in Lenoir City at First Baptist Church, Lenoir City, you will see me there this Sunday. They're having a missions day, and we're going to have some information about Hope Resource Center there at First Baptist in Lenoir City. In a couple weeks, I'll be at First Baptist Concord as they're having a missions week. And then that Sunday morning on October 1st, hopefully I will be speaking briefly in front of the congregation as well. So if you're a Concord, if you're a member of Concord, or maybe that Sunday you want to come, would love to see you out there. So a lot of things happening, a lot of exciting things occurring at Hope Resource Center that we want to keep you updated. Again, if you ever feel out of the loop, just go to investinghope.com and you can learn all that you need right there. So again, we appreciate your support. We appreciate your prayers. We appreciate your partnership. Because as I always say, we could not do any of that work without you. If you have a question about the podcast and you're like, man, I really would love for you to have this guest on, I really would love for you to have a conversation with this person, then shoot me an email, andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Would love to hear from you, and then I could connect with some folks and have them on the show to talk about our life ethic. That isn't just, we're not just against abortion. We certainly are against abortion, but it doesn't stop there. So we want to partner, like last week with World Orphans, and I've spoken with pro-life advocates and pastors and different folks from a lot of different areas in the pro-life movement. We want to have them on so we can talk about the life ethic from a Christian standpoint and what that means for us from womb to the tomb. Okay, so we'll be back again next week. If you want to, in the meantime, get caught up on the podcast, again, investinghope.com and on iTunes. Would love for you to do that. Talk to you soon. Like a bird up from his cage, like a slave up from his shop. Like a dead man from his grave, like a blind man from